The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Nightclub at the end of the world. It's Michael Rupert again. I'm back. It's Sunday, October 23rd, 2011, a week before Halloween. Change of seasons and a change of everything in the air. We had an amazing show last week with Charles Eisenstein, author of Sacred Economics. I've gotten enormous feedback from that, really good feedback, saying thank you for introducing people to him. I just sent out an email today asking him if he'll come back on the show next week. We have a lot more to talk about, especially when it comes to money, and we want to focus and maybe try to get a little series going. He's just an amazing guy. His writings are brilliant, and he's one of a couple of great guests that we've had on the show lately. Dave DeGraw of AmpStatus.com and Occupy Wall Street was on the week before. You know, it seems like last week's show was like 6 months ago. There's been so much going on, but that's the way it is these days. It's the quickening, as they say. Let's take a quick look around the world first before we get down to the show tonight. And it's going to be just you and me tonight, no guest. But we got some important things to talk about. I want to share something very powerful with you. But around the world, the European debacle gets more debaculous by the day. I have no other way to describe it. It is the absolute theater of the absurd. We have had, over the course of the last 2 or 3 weeks, a big stage show with Nicolas Sarkozy and Angela Merkel, now known as infamously as Merkozy, doing a dog and pony show embrace on stage, saying that they'd solved the problem. Then we've had a split, then we've had a mend again, and now it's an out-and-out feud between Germany and France. Nobody can get any act together with regard to the European debt situation. And it was announced that all of the European banks, and there's a lot of many of them, most of them, who are close to going under, had been needing to recapitalize, and they had announced that they were going to recapitalize by selling assets. Now, what their assets are things like mortgage-backed securities and municipal bonds and, you know, some Greek debt, and they're going to sell those, and nobody's buying. The bottom has fallen out of the bond market. And the world economy is just imploding at breakneck speed. In China, it looks like a hard landing is also imminent within the next couple of weeks for China. We've been bringing that to you regularly. Our economy is toast. I just looked at news links, and I may go through and look for some of the stories we're going to have on the World News Desk tomorrow to talk about tonight. But there's a story that the U.S. is about to get downgraded again. That recalculates the interest on everything, and none of this debt is ever going to be repaid. But I think probably what has been most heartbreaking for me this week to watch is the rate at which both India and Pakistan are collapsing. We have been bringing you stories on breaking news and on our World News Desk at CollapseNet that in India, blackouts are spreading throughout major cities in the country. In a desperation move, the Indian government rounded up hundreds and hundreds of workers and shipped them to frantically dig for coal because they're down to 1 or 2 days, maybe 3 days of reserves, which is nothing. They normally carry 10 days to 2 weeks, and in many cases they're out of reserves. They're having blackouts all over the country. There are riots as a result of the blackouts. Some major cities, I believe it was Delhi, was dark for 3 days last week. The world media is not telling you this. And Pakistan is even more horrific, if that's possible. They're having massive riots all over the country for the same reasons, power blackouts everywhere, shortages of fuel. They had a train run out of fuel on the track, leaving passengers stranded for, I think it was a day and a half, but the passengers were rioting on the train because there was no energy to move the train. Greece is literally non-functional. Everybody's on strike. It's a full-scale revolution there. And yet the IMF and EU and the central banks all try to pretend as if anything is ever going to be repaid out of an economy and a country which is now pretty well destroyed. But I guess we're going to have to rewrite our definitions of destroyed many times over here. And Occupy Wall Street is still going strong. It is major outpourings in Portugal and Spain this week, and in Portland, Oregon, there's many thousands of people. Anybody up in Portland listening, I love you. Great work. They're feeding the homeless there. There's a tent city, and the Portland cops are going along with it. And this movement is still alive, even though mainstream media chooses to ignore it. We are discovering that we have completely different means of getting our information now, and mainstream media is really pretty much obsolete. But it has been a horrible week for attacks by police on Occupy protesters all over the world. Last Friday, I was just shocked by the video, by the footage that had come out of Melbourne. You can find that on the CollapseNet website, our must-see videos, showing the real brutality that was being directed against nonviolent, unarmed protesters. There was even a clip of someone being dragged by their hair, which is very painful, and that's very not cool. And so we have these real mixed reports about, you know, some cops being really good and being sympathetic, like the ones in San Francisco who were crying as they confiscated personal belongings, and many police departments being cool. But it is very clear that the gloves are coming off from governments around the world, and I was really dismayed by it. So I heard from David DeGraw on Friday, and we were emailing back and forth about it, and he said it's really bad. And I emailed him back and I said, look, if there's anything I can do to help, you know, I was a cop. And he said, well, could you make us a video to be shown to all police officers? And I said, sure, right away, but, you know, no pressure there. So I have been spent the last 2 days, and I just finished shooting this video about 30 minutes before we went on the air tonight. And it was an amazing experience to go through. Of course, all of us know and were deeply moved by the honorable performance of Marine Sergeant Shamar Thomas in Times Square last week. That video I know has been watched by many people around the world, and I guess if I'm talking to anybody tonight on this show, it's to any police officers anywhere in the world who are listening, and I know some of you are because it's your job, but that's who I'm talking to tonight. And nobody said it better than Shamar Thomas did. These are unarmed civilians. They do not have guns. This is not a war. We are not trying to hurt you. We are citizens in this country or in any other country in the world exercising a God-given right to freedom of speech and freedom of assembly. And it is your job as police officers to protect us and our right to do this. I spent about a day, solid day, agonizing over how I was going to construct this. And I noticed in the video that the New York cops who were facing Shamar Thomas kept walking up to him and, you know, checking out the ribbons on his chest. And those ribbons tell stories. Anybody who's been in the military knows that. You can read a guy's history. I saw three rows on Shamar's chest, and I recognized some of the medals, decoration showing that he was a combat veteran and had served honorably. And those are the kinds of things that you watch how that all that stopped the NYPD cops dead in their tracks. That's something that a warrior has, and this was the approach I tried to take in the videotape. There's something that a warrior has, and a warrior like Shamar Thomas has power. His voice has power. He speaks with authority. And there have been a great many warriors, and I went back through my life, and it really forced me to just go reevaluate and listen again and learn again to all the things I had learned about honor and combat. One of the first things that came to my mind was there are heroes, there are warriors who never ever get close to battle. And they have more honor than many who have served in battle, and they have more power because they are a warrior has failed if he has to use violence. That's what some schools teach, and so I thought first of a guy named Brian Wilson. Brian Wilson is a guy who he was an anti-nuclear protester who in the 1980s laid down on train tracks in front of a train that was destined to leave, I believe it was in the state of Washington, with a rail car full of nuclear warheads. And he put his body on the line. He laid across the track. The train had stopped, but the train started, and the train slowly ran over him and amputated both of his legs. That's a warrior. That's honor. And I thought of a friend of mine, Dennis Morisseau, who I met in Vermont. I was honored to finally meet him when I was there about, must be close to 2 years ago now, on a tour. And Dennis Morisseau was an officer with the U.S. Army. He was a tank commander. He was a tanker. And he was the first U.S. military officer to refuse deployment to Vietnam because he was fighting in an unjust war. Those are warriors we never hear about, but those are the real ones who make the difference. And so as I was putting this tape together, feeling this enormous weight, like I'm trying to talk to, and I hope Occupy Wall Street likes the video. I mean, you know, all I'm going to do is send it to them and say, guys, this is the best I could do. This was a hell of a challenge, and if you like it, please use it. And if not, I'm sure I'll use it at CollapseNet. But what a load that is. And so I went and thought about the one warrior teacher who has been the most important of my life, and I've been blessed to know a great many warriors. Those of you who watch my video see this picture over my left shoulder of this big, snarly-looking guy with a black beard and a ponytail, who's Commander Dick Marcinko, the founder of SEAL Team 6. And right above him on my wall, above my desk, I'm looking at it right now, is a picture of me and former retired Army Master Sergeant Stan Goff, who served with U.S. Army Special Forces in Delta. And it's at a table that we were at, going through 2,000 pages of Army records that had been given to us by Mary Tillman, the mother of Pat Tillman, the Ranger pro football star who was killed with the Rangers in Afghanistan by friendly fire, and led to a huge cover-up, which we broke because it was dishonorable. But the one warrior in my life who has made the most difference and who will always be my supreme teacher is a guy named Skip Mayhawk. And I found a lot in what Skip Mayhawk had taught me that applies directly to the police officers who are now being ordered, tasked to oppress the Occupy Wall Street, the Occupy Together movement. I met Skip in October of 2001. And I was in my hotel room. I was just about ready to go on stage at Portland State University and give the lecture, which became my video, The Truth and Lies of 9/11. And I was nervous. I was scared shitless. And there's a knock on the door. And I go and open the door, and there's a short, about 5'5", 5'6", Native American guy. I know that because he's wearing a big hat that says Native, and he looks like a Native. And he's carrying a camera and a tripod, and he says, "Hello, my name is Skip Mayhawk. I'm here to be your second cameraman tonight." And I didn't know anything about it. I thought we were only going to have one camera for that shoot. He said Dimitri Deslas, the student organizer who had arranged the speech, had sent him. But when the video comes out, there's going to be a picture of Skip in there. He had the most powerful gaze I have ever seen in my life. You just froze. You knew that you were standing in the presence of power. And you got the same feeling when he spoke. It wasn't a big gnarly, but he was just powerful. So I came into the room and I'm nervously trying to tie my tie. I think I tied my tie maybe 6 or 7 times that night. And Skip told me his story. Skip had served with the U.S. Army's 101st Airborne Division in the Oshawa Valley in Vietnam in 1968. And Vietnam veterans, every Vietnam veteran knows of the Oshawa and the horrors and the hells that took place there. I've met a couple guys from the 101st who walked out of the Oshawa, and you know, total tip of the hat. But Skip told me, almost matter-of-factly, that as a result of his actions in the Oshawa Valley in 1968, he had been awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor. And he refused it because he was fighting in an unjust war. Now, Skip was a senior elder of the Dakota Sioux from Oregon. I think a branch of the tribe had been moved there and put on a reservation after the 1870s, 1880s. And as we talked, and as he told me that, I had to let that sink in for quite a bit because that spoke volumes to me. And what Skip was teaching me was things that that a real warrior seeks. And the first thing that a real warrior will seek is a just war. And then, if necessary, to die an honorable death in that war. So as I let that sink in, I was talking, I looked over at Skip, and I said, Skip, why is it that we can hate war and violence with all of our hearts, and yet we can love the warriors so much? And what Skip said to me was, there was a time when war was about bravery. There was a time when war was about honor. And that's all he said. And so let me join Shamar Thomas. And in this video, I put my ribbons out there so that every policeman in the world will understand that I have the right to speak to them with honor because I did that, and I did it well. When that video comes out, and you know, there is no honor in attacking unarmed civilians. There's no honor in pulling our hair, gassing us, running us over, hitting us with nightsticks, throwing us to the ground, or any of the other things that are being done. And I know, especially I know, from where I sit, that it's going to get worse, that the amount of the violence is going to increase. We have all of recorded history that tells us that about popular uprisings and about popular movements. And it probably will come to a point where policemen will shoot unarmed civilians. And that is to be expected. That's unfortunately on the map. And as that happens, I want every cop out there who has been sickened by what they've seen, I want every honest police officer everywhere in the world who has a distaste for attacks on unarmed civilians and distaste for the tactics that are being used in the pit of your stomach, I want you all to understand something. We're in the collapse of human industrial civilization, and at Collapse Net, for more than the last year, we have tracked how hundreds and hundreds of thousands of police officers all over the world have been laid off and sacked because of budget cuts. I remember one of the stories, 30,000 in Britain at one whack. And you know who's going to get laid off? You know who's getting laid off? It's the ones who have a conscience. It's the ones who will hold back, because only the most ruthless killers will be retained, and that is going to serve to further polarize events. But what it will take are Demi Morisots. What it will take are Brian Wilsons and Shamar Thomases and real warriors with real honor to step out of those ranks and either say, I can't do this anymore, and join us, or just to refuse to support it, because if you have a heart and you have a conscience, you're going to lose your job anyway. Very powerful, and these are great times, and there's a lot of choices that are going to be made, but we know that there's a lot of police officers all around the world who understand what this is. What are we protesting at Occupy Wall Street? Everything. I want to give a special thanks to the Santa Rosa Police Department. That's the closest town to me. It's a town of 150,000, and we had, I think, close to 4,000 people there. It was one of the highest per capita turnouts in the country. They were very polite. But I got to say this, and I got to say this to all of you cops out there who are getting off on this. You're the bad guys, and we know it. And we will put your pictures up everywhere, and you will walk naked in that shame, and you will have no place to hide behind the badge or the uniform. I'm going to go into a song tonight, which I think is very appropriate. And after the break, we'll come back and take your calls. I've got some emails. If you want to ask questions, you want to talk about anything tonight, the number is 1-888-874-4888, 1-888-874-4888, or you can email me directly at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com, and I'll get your questions on the air. But this song is important because this is the first song. And by the way, we're also at, we're also on Twitter at PRN Radio on Twitter, at PRN underscore radio on Twitter. Thank you for the board for prompting me on this. And I remember this from last week. We now have a new URL in addition to progressiveradionetwork.com. It's now PRN.FM. I like that. I think it's Steely Dan. FM. Anyway, so for the song tonight, because there's so much emotion and so much power from this, this is the first song that I ever got credit for being a co-writer on, which fulfilled a huge lifelong dream. And I was very much thinking about Skip Mayhawk when I wrote and sang the parts of this song that I do. I sing a Native American lament in this song, and it's called We Can't Escape From, and there's a strong Native American influence to it, which bespeaks for me, I think now as I'm thinking about it, the load that a warrior carries, because every warrior I've met in my life has served honorably, fought honorably with bravery and with courage, and I salute that and I respect that. But not a one of them has ever been offered the chance to fight in an honorable war. And those are the rucksacks that we carry, because in those dishonorable wars, we were part in one way or another of a great many things which were reprehensible. But this song is not necessarily about warriorhood, but it's about accepting nobly that which we are given to deal with in these very tough times. The song is called We Can't Escape From. We'll be right back.
Another long war, and we've come up red, getting dying, soaking, sold to the lies that we said, and now we can't escape from. Another long war, and we've come up red, getting dying, soldiers sold for lies that we said, and now we can't escape from.
Thank you.
That was from New White Trash, and you can find that song, if you liked it, at www.newwhitetrash.com. I haven't plugged the band for a while. We're not functioning anymore, but you can find that and 36 other originals at the site. I tip my hat in that to my bandmate, Doug Lewis. We'll come back to Doug in a second, to Kristen Weigard, who sang the amazing vocals in that. And Andy Kravitz, bandmate, who worked the board on that and came up with that incredible mix of her voice. Good work all the way around. It's a great song. I love it. I'm just so honored to have been a part of that. Doug Lewis, by the way, I talked about him on the show. He's has stage 4 cancer. He's been really struggling, and he's a tough, amazing friend of mine. He's no longer in Venice, California. He got out, and I'm glad he did. He's now in southern Colorado on land. It's kind of rugged out there from the picture I saw, but Dougie's doing well, and there's a greenhouse, and his dog Squishy is laying happily on the ground with his tongue hanging out. So I'm really glad to hear that Doug is in a good place with water and some arable land and some friends, and building that lifeboat. That's good. We're going to go to a station break just now. I see that Matthew from Montreal is on hold. Let me see if we can get to Matthew real quick. Are you there, Matthew?
Yes, I am.
What's up, man?
Okay, yeah, I have a question for you regarding growing our own food, because I know, I've been listening to you for a while now, and I know the importance of growing food, but the thing is that in Montreal we have really cold winters, and we have pretty the same thing in New York. So do you have any references on either online or in books about how to do it?
The first place I would go is to the free lighthouse directory at collapsenet.com. That's my website. Okay, well, go to the free lighthouse directory. There's 1,600 hand-picked entries. And as I recall, there's a couple in there about growing food in colder climates. If not, there are links to people who will direct you to what's going on, certainly in your area. And if you're a member, you can ask anyone in the area if they know about that. I know there's a lot of permaculture activity up there. I just don't know it off the top of my head, but that's findable. If you can't find it there, you might connect with Transition Towns. I believe they have a Transitions U.S. I believe they have a Transition Initiative active, one or two in Montreal. And so you should be able to find your answers locally, which is one of the lessons I've learned here in Sebastopol, where I am, man, is that usually the answers that you want about growing food are really, really close by to where you are, and I'm sure you're going to find what you need.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rupert.
All right, man, thank you very much. All right, bottom of the hour, going to go to a station break here. We'll be right back after these messages on the Lifeboat Hour. Yeah, the new white trash. We all knew white trash. No matter what color we are, baby, we all knew white trash. Now, I was so glad during the commercial to hear Joni Mitchell's voice. I just so adore her. And I was privileged to hang out with her for a few hours back in the mid-90s, I guess, at my friend David Bearwald's house studio in Venice. And she's just an amazing lady. And not too long ago, I made a tape called Say My Name, which I'm sure a lot of you have seen. And I called out on all the famous musicians of the 60s, you know, to get off their butts and do something. And David Crosby called me a nut job. That kind of broke my heart. I was so overjoyed this week to see Pete Seeger walking around Occupy Wall Street in New York. Pete Seeger, man, he is... like the direct linear descendant from Woody Guthrie, and I would call him the father of Bob Dylan. And Pete Seeger, like 93 years old, and he was out there smiling, and he brought so much light to that event. And I just tip my hat to you, Pete. You are a legend, man. You are the real deal, and I'm glad you ain't lost it. And I'm just glad you showed up, man. Thank you for that. A couple things we have. We have several emails to go to with some questions, and some are pretty good. A couple things I want to point out. We have a new must-see video that should be up now or going up, taken in Wisconsin State Legislature as people sitting in the gallery way up high in the back, you know, in the cheap seats, were just quietly holding small signs. One woman was wearing a blouse with a protest message on it. And they called in 10 state troopers to remove these people from the chambers. And it's a pretty awesome video because it shows three or four members of the state legislature objecting, saying, this is America. They're not, I don't even know they're there. They're not interrupting me. They have a right to do this. Why are you, and the legislators were saying this. That's an amazing video. You might want to take a look at that. And I should also note that Wired had a story yesterday showing that Anonymous and Anti-Sec, I think that's the other group, I don't even know, had hacked a number of law enforcement websites around the country, apparently around the world. They got into the website of the International Association of Chiefs of Police, I think some police agencies in Boston. Boston coppers have been pretty nasty out there. And they published material from the websites, and they actually took the sites down. So that is going on. And the fact that, I haven't seen a single report of it anywhere else in the mainstream media tells me that the powers that be are extremely worried about this. They are having their own vulnerabilities pointed out to them time and time again. This is a truly asymmetrical warfare. And I'll speak on behalf of the Anonymous situation, you know, as a former cop. Those are very big people, and those are very intelligent people, and they're adults, and they know what they're doing, and they know there's risks attached to it. And we all decide when and how we're going to fight. But let me just say this to all the cops out there. You don't get to beat innocent protesters because Anonymous hacked a website. Because I'll tell you something, the people who you're beating on have no knowledge about that. Anyway, I'm just kind of harping on that because I have an opinion. Okay, we have an email from Brad Miller. He says, I've been reading The Great Crash by Harry Dent, which predicts a market crash in 2012-14 based largely on demographics and economic conditions similar to that of the Great Depression. Harry makes an argument for the U.S. dollar being a safe haven after the crash as the economy experiences rampant deflation. Preparing for deflation is completely different from inflation, and I wanted to hear your thoughts on this. Good question, Brad. What you should prepare for is collapse. That's the simple answer to that. Loosely speaking, there's a school that had been talking about deflation, which would be Nicole Foss, who's been a guest on the show several times. She's a brilliant, wonderful woman. And others say Chris Martinson and others who see hyperinflation as likely. Whatever's going to come, you may have both at the same time. Nothing is making sense now. And you may have one that'll last for a couple of months and then the other one kicks in for 6 months. But it's collapse that you need to prepare for. About 8 months ago or so, maybe even longer, on our website at CollapseNet, I started telling people to start disengaging from the market and invest in hard goods. Invest in the physical things that you will need to survive. Invest in first aid. Invest in tools. Invest in guns if you need them. Invest in batteries. Invest in, start getting yourself prepared to live without being able to go to the store and get things. And preparing yourself for the experience of going to the store and finding the shelves are empty. That's what you need to prepare for. I have said to everybody, stay long on cash if you can, but that doesn't mean put it all in cash. I'm still a big fan of gold, and the gold market now is brutally weeding out all of those fools who had invested in paper gold. And the big breakout for physical will come soon enough. And everything looks now like it's all being timed to happen middle of November. But I think wasting your time on inflation versus deflation is probably not going to be very productive for you. And whatever answer you come up with is still going to be trumped by the fact that everything is collapsing. Okay, we have an email from Mike. You probably know this already. Lost audio. What? This is from Cindy Blackshear. Can the board hear me in New York? I've got four or five emails here. We'll check. But as far as I know, the audio is working fine. I sure hope it is. And I'm multitasking. I'm sorry. I'm old, so I got to talk to myself while I do this. Okay, going out. Okay, so I sent the message. We'll find out, Cindy. We'll get back to that in a second. I'm assuming that I'm live, and I'm going to operate on that assumption. Leroy writes in. He says, hello and greetings from Romania. Hi, man. How are you? I don't know how to say hi in Romanian. I'd say it in Russian, but you'd probably get upset. I've been following you since the truth and lies of 9/11. Thank you, man. And I'd like to thank you for the very important work you've been doing. It really is priceless. I'll cut right to the chase. I'm worried that as science and technology break down, critical research will cease to be done and vital information will unnecessarily be lost. In many ways, we're on the brink of making a quantum leap, and I feel strongly like we, humanity, really shouldn't drop the ball now, not without a fight. I feel a moral duty to help preserve the heritage that matters. Very good. From ongoing historical research to good music to consciousness studies. What are your thoughts on what we can do to ensure the continuation of research in areas of great importance? Do you think it's futile? Have you heard of initiatives in this sense? No, I don't. But what you can expect is that the important scientific or technological research that has been done, which is extremely expensive, will go away. And that's just a product of the fact that there won't be a lot of money to fund this stuff. I mean, I think of the huge, the Hadron Super Collider in Switzerland or the one in Texas, and, you know, God knows how much money has gone into those. Or for, if you will, space exploration, well, that's already dead. So that is going to go away. Preserving the knowledge is going to be a lot easier thanks to the digital age that we live in. We can store enormous amounts of information on computers. I'm not so much worried about preserving the knowledge. I am worried about our ability to disseminate it widely as power blackouts continue to increase, as infrastructure fails, as we gradually start to lose large pieces of the net. But there are, and I know this well, around the world now, millions of people who are very aware of what's going on, and we're all making preparations in a great many ways to preserve as much knowledge as we can, and that's probably a much better head start than they had after the fall of the Roman Empire. Robert Nelson Batchelor right. You said banks will start selling assets, mortgage-backed securities, recapitalized. Bernanke hints the Fed may start to buy these. Will this still kick the can farther down the road or more the next year or later? No, man, it's over. It's just done. Every time that there has been, QE1 was the first bailout. That was TARP and the $11 trillion worth of bailouts that were given to banks. That had a positive effect that carried us roughly from 2008 through, I would say, the beginning of 2010, maybe, before things started to unravel again, or up to the middle of 2010. Then we had QE2. Now, what did QE2 did? QE2 triggered massive worldwide food inflation. It started currency wars, and it had very, very much less effect than QE1 did. And as QE3 was being kicked around, it was apparent to everybody that QE3 was going to be at least much less effective than QE2 was. It's a diminishing marginal return thing. And nobody wants to buy these assets because everybody knows they're non-performing. Nothing is growing. Nobody's making profits unless, in still a few cases, they can cook the books and rearrange some ones and zeros, but there's no more actual real productivity or real profit going anywhere. So growth is over, period. It's done. I just read that the Bernanke may actually start buying mortgage-backed securities again, and I thought, oh, my God, we've come absolutely full circle on the madness of these crimes. He's going to go out and buy documents, instruments, which everybody knows are frauds. I mean, my friend Dmitry Orlov, you know, has this great line about the aha moment when, like, the light goes on for everybody. And, you know, this has got to be an aha moment when Bernanke says he's going to go out and invest debt that we have to repay into assets that are fraudulent. Albert Einstein also said that the only difference between genius and stupidity is that there are limits to genius. So we don't know how long the madness is going to go on, but it's not going to last much longer. Ellen Rainwalker writes in, anyone who wants to grow food in cold climate should check out, this is great, here's your answers, man. I love this networking. Check out Elliot Coleman's, C-O-L-E-M-A-N-S, apostrophe S, Elliot Coleman's books. He lives in Vermont, and his book, Four Season Harvest, is excellent. He also has a great website. Yeah, when I was up in Vermont, I met a guy, Ben Falk, I think his name was, who is a permaculturist who is growing rice in Vermont. So there's totally a lot you can do up there. Good, the emails are coming in. Hi, everybody. It's nice to hear from you all tonight. Beth Weiser writes in from Arizona. My husband and I are teachers, and we have been raising chickens and building our greenhouse. Good for you. I love chickens. We have four of them. I can go out and talk to them. I realize that collapse will happen one piece at a time, but I'm concerned about being able to pay our mortgage so we are not kicked out of our home. What do you think about the chances of still having your job for a while? Do you think our mortgage company will get to the point of not demanding payments? Yes, all that is going to happen at some point as everything falls apart and it becomes irrelevant. And even as money, assuming that hyperinflation shows up, becomes like unimportant. We don't know all that. We certainly don't have the dates. And we are nearing that time. It is very clear to me, and all the economic writers, you know, the people like Zero Hedge and Business Insider and great stuff from The Telegraph and The Guardian and, really respectable journalists, that what's coming within the next 2 weeks is, in fact, the biggest, and there was one headline that actually said this, the biggest economic catastrophe in human history. That is here upon us right now. So if you don't have the answer, Beth, tonight, you probably will in a couple of weeks. We just all have to time that so that we know that we're off the ship and don't stop making payments while we still have the teeth to come and make our lives miserable. From Greg. Our message is still coming in. I can't afford gold, but I'm trying to buy silver as I have extra free cash. Good. Do you feel gold and silver will go down as our economy collapses before it goes up again? Thanks for what you do. Anybody who buys precious metals should always be prepared for ups and downs. That's what happens. There has never, ever been a situation where the price of gold or silver flatlined or took a step up, $50 an ounce and stayed there. Those are normal fluctuations. We are still faced with tremendous, dishonest, corrupt situations in both of the precious metals markets. Silver is different. Max Kaiser is a great expert on silver, and J.P. Morgan's got a big trust there. And Chicago Board of Trade, has like 25,000 more futures contracts than there are silver to fulfill, and maybe it's roughly the same situation with gold. We know that there's 100 times more physical paper gold than there is gold out of the ground. Yes, they're going to go up and down, but they will match inflation and they will hold value when you find that the paper dollars, few or many that you may have, will become valueless. Silver is also used in industry, so there's different variables. But you need a mix of cash and precious metals. Take care of your hard goods first. You know, your survival stuff that you might not be able to buy in 6 weeks or 6 months. Make sure that's covered. And if you have money, precious metals are still the way to hold on to as much value as you can as we stumble our way toward a new economic paradigm. And that's why I'm so looking forward to having Charles Eisenstein back on the show. I hope he comes back next week. From Pablo Panero. Well, hi, Mike. You're on the air and on the Internet. By the way, how's your dog? Rags is fine. He's downstairs. He just had dinner. He is the goofiest dog and the best dog that was ever made. And if it wasn't for him, I tell you that I would have been absolutely drooling in a corner somewhere, probably in a straitjacket several months ago. Maybe a year or two ago, and he's the best thing in my life. He's a spirit in a dog suit, and I love him. And thanks for asking. I'll go scratch his ears for you. From Robert Batchelor again. Thanks for answering my question. Thanks for answering my question. You guys rock, and I am grateful to be awake, and I am grateful you're awake too. And here's to everybody who is waking up. From Randy. What is the root cause of the way the world operates? Does it stem from the financial sector system or the economic hitmen?
This is a part of like the big question that everybody who starts looking into this gets to, like, what's the source of all this? And it's a question that I have wrestled with, you know, for more than a decade. At the end of my most recent book, Confronting Collapse, from Chelsea Green, I presented what my conclusion was, and I think Charles Eisenstein's view was amazingly similar to mine. Everything stems to me from my analysis and from all the research I've done for all these years, a detective on the case, from the infinite growth paradigm. Because, you know, it's like the Rothschild said, just let me have control of the money, and I don't care who passes the laws or who runs the government. Money is God. That's why you look at a dollar bill and you see that in God we trust, and that joke's on you, baby, because what they're doing is saying, yeah, in God we trust, the money is the God. And of course they trust money to operate the way money has always operated in infinite growth. And everything stems from that. The economic hitmen are ecosystem organisms that were created to serve the infinite growth paradigm. That's why taking, you know, getting rid of the people won't solve the problem. It's all part of the same package, but all of that is in service to infinite growth. That's why on the show last week and in my recent speeches, you know, we say that, you know, it's becoming very clear that universal global debt forgiveness is going to be absolutely essential at some point, because we're all going to wake up and we're going to realize that each one of us, as a result of this absolute crime syndicate that controls the world economy, that each one of us owes, you know, $432 billion personally. You know, but it more than that, it's debt, which during the Great Depression shut everything down, because it was debt that kept kept trucks from delivering milk when the cows were there, that kept crops from getting harvested or crops from getting planted. It was debt that stopped all of that. And until you remove the debt, that weight is going to be there no matter what you do. And at the same time that you remove the debt, you have to kill infinite growth. You have to kill fractional reserve banking, fiat currency, and compound interest forever. Those things have to be absolutely sacred. Otherwise, infinite growth comes back. Otherwise, we're back in that world of the pairs of opposites, the knowledge of good and evil, rich and poor, the world of fear, the world of division, the world of separation, which has loosely been sold to us as dominion, as our species having dominion over the rest of the universe. Well, the universe is just flatly saying to us, we're full of shit. And you know, that's what the deal is. We've got a little time, so I thought I want to do this with you, because so much is happening now. I'm going to go to my inbox, and every day from a rice farmer in Japan, who's one of our foundation stones, I get a list of news links, and I get another one in the morning from Jenna Orkin. You know, we've developed this research methodology, and I thought I would just run through and take a look at a few of the headlines in the last 5 minutes of the show here that we're going to have on the World News Desk. U.S. rating likely to be downgraded again. Merrill, again, that recalculates all the interest, blows all the budgets out the windows. And there's all these headlines about Europe. I love this one headline I just see. EU is reporting progress, but none of it is meaningful. Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. Currency market braces for Japanese intervention. The Japanese yen has risen to about 74, 75 against the dollar. Now, the Japanese yen needs to be weak in order for Japan to sell exports, because exports are denominated in dollars. And a strong Japanese yen kills Japanese business, which is already being killed because of Fukushima and the fact that Japan has lost about 20% of its electrical generating capacity, which is absolutely essential for economic activity. Here's more in the European catfight. Nicolas Sarkozy tells David Cameron, we're sick of you telling us what to do. Hey, you tell the Bank of England, France, the people who control the money that are making these decisions. And I'm going to have to read that, because I personally don't like David Cameron myself, but, you know, this is all to be predicted. Eurozone summit, despair and backbiting in the corridors of power. See, this is really degenerating. There's no coming back from this. This is dead. I mean, all we're waiting for is for everybody to realize it. Global systemic crisis, first half of 2012, decimation of Western banks. These are the headlines that are coming out. What do I see else here? Saudi King Prince Sultan died this week. He was the successor to King Abdullah, who is also very sick. They're both old guys. I think Sultan was like 87, and Sultan and Abdullah's 89, and so they're going to bring in this youngster who's 77 years old, is now being lined up. We don't know what's going on there. I think that'll be a smooth transition. Saudi Arabia has a ton of other problems, but I don't think it's going to show up in the succession. 130 people arrested at Occupy Chicago protest. Got to read about that. We'll have that on the World News Desk. We have a full page that's updated every day with all the developments from around the world on the CollapseNet site. It's called the Occupy page, and you can, and we give you feeds to everything that they're putting out, so you can stay on top of it there, and we link you to everything that they're doing. Tens of thousands have just rallied against the Hungarian government. And St. Paul's Cathedral, that started out being a nice guy, may seek an injunction to move the Occupy London activists. Yeah, give them an inch, they'll take a mile. And church was nice, but our patience wears thin with these people who, unarmed civilians, never mind. We know how that's going to play. Diesel users are facing a fuel pinch in the U.S. There's a shortage of diesel out here now. It's because refineries are failing and infrastructure's wearing out and getting old. We have some new stuff that's going to be up tomorrow on fresh and easy recalls of bagged spinach, and a whole bunch of other stuff. The news continuing to come out of Japan, I don't have time to go through it all tonight, is horrible. The amounts of cesium that are now confirmed to have been deposited, it was one story this week, are greater than all of the cesium left from all of the above ground testing from every nuclear weapon in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. It's so bad, and there's so many tons of debris out there, and people are getting sick. There's a new tape from Arne Gundersen that we're going to have up on the site soon, that it's so hard to watch Japan suffer its fate and go the way it's going. But, wow, and I'm just looking at these headlines. They're going to make me work tonight. And I'm watching this, and it may be a completely different world when we come back next week, and it may be a completely different world the week when we come back after that. What's really good to know is that Occupy Wall Street is out there, it's strong, it's thriving, it has not made the mistake of issuing demands which would be used to break it into 1,000 pieces, and Occupy Wall Street is being very smart because they're waiting for the billion or so people that are about ready to come out on the street and join them. And to all the police officers out there everywhere in the world, we beg and we pray that you find the strength to choose honor. And that in so doing, you can come and find and join with us, because all the bad guys out there who are loving to beat us up, you're on the wrong side. You're on the wrong side of history. And we all know that. All right, man. That's it for tonight. This is Michael Rupert. I will be back with you next week on the Lifeboat Hour. Good night.